Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello! Hi, and welcome to Question Reality. I'm Priscilla Leona, producer and host of this show, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. For 10 years, we have been ranked the number one entertainment career advice show, and this is the show to listen to if you are currently pursuing or dreaming about a career in the entertainment industry. And the guests on this show are going to help you by providing tips, advice, and resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in a wide variety of show business professions. And the guests on our show include Emmy winners, Grammy winners, Tony Award winners, reality TV stars, film and music producers, film and television directors, casting directors, talent managers, screenwriters, actors, singers, comedians, writers, script supervisors, stunt people, and around December we throw in an entertainment attorney just because they're so important. And if you missed any of our shows, please go to our archive page, which is on the LA Talk Radio.com website, and search for the name of our show, which is Question Reality, or you can search by my name, Priscilla Leona. And all of the Question Reality shows are also available 24 hours a day on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher.com under the podcast section. And please make sure you get our free mobile app, which is on the homepage of the LATalkRadio.com website, located on the right-hand side towards the bottom of the page, because you do not want to miss a show on LA Talk Radio. Oh my gosh, that rhymes. I love that. I just made that up. Finally, if you want to be a guest or refer someone who's working professionally already to be on the show to promote themselves, showcase their products, their films, their books, their tours, anything, and they genuinely want to help listeners with Sage Career Advice, we want to book you. We still are booking for October, November, and December. There are a couple spots left, so please give us an email. You want to go to the official website, though, not the LA Talk Radio website. You want to go to our official website, which is questionrealityradioshow.com, questionrealityradioshow.com, and click on the contact link, and that is where you submit for interview consideration. So that is where you go. Now, finally, the exciting part, the guest. Now, today we have an actor, producer, and soap opera star. Love that. love to say soap opera. Soap opera star. Some of the soap operas my family is very big on soap operas. They watch every single soap opera, so they know him, and I got a ton of questions, and I said, no, I am not asking this man these soap opera questions. What they were like, oh, what happened to it? What did you? They like think it's real. Oh, my gosh. So he's been on Passions, Days of Our Lives, Port Charles, and we'll be discussing today, though, the latest film that he's starring in, along with a gentleman that, when I say the name, you're going to go crazy. Oh, maybe I shouldn't say it. Yeah. Okay, I'll say it. Gilby Clark from the legendary rock band Guns N' Roses, one of my favorite bands from the 80s. And now, of course, Gilby Clark's not here today. It's just our lovely, gorgeous, sexy Christopher Malecki. I guess I didn't even say his name. Christopher Malecki is here. Yes. But the film is called Last Curtain Call. Love that title. Isn't that the best title ever? The film tells the story of an aspiring rock star who's neglected his family over his long music career. And unfortunately, just as he is about to get his big break in the music industry, he's diagnosed with early onset dementia. And knowing that his life is limited, he tries to make up for lost time with his loved ones, but is it too late? And the only way you're going to find out is if you go and see the movie. And the movie is currently playing at the Arena Cine Lounge, and that's 6464 Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, California. Of course, you have to come all the way to Hollywood to see the film. Well, at least from August 24th through August 30th. After that, hopefully it's a national theatrical release. But from August 24th until August the 30th, again, it can be seen this week, August 24th. It's not August 24th yet. You still have a couple of days to buy tickets. And you can go to the website to buy the tickets at arenascreen.com. That's ArenaScreen.com, arenascreen.com, and then search for Last Curtain Call, and you will be able to buy tickets. Now, you can also find Christopher on Facebook as well. He is all over the place, but you want to check him out and maybe give him a little finger, a good finger, a thumbs up. I shouldn't say give him a finger. Give him a little thumbs up. Like him on Facebook.com under Last Curtain Call. He's also on Facebook as Christopher Maleki, M-A-L-E-K-I. He's on Wikipedia. And again, buy those tickets. Now, after you hear him, you are going to want to buy those tickets, but you better get them quick because they're going fast. So please, without further ado, let's bring him on now. Welcome, Christopher Maleki. I hope that's how you say your last name, or is it Maleki? Or is it Malachi?
It's Maleki, neither of the above, but you did pretty good, though. Thank you. How are you, Priscilla?
I had three tries and I got it wrong. Maleki.
Yes,
I'm
ma'am.
Sure I'm going to butcher it again, but that's okay. Well, you can correct me. Now, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I know you got a really, really, really busy week with this huge film coming out. Oh my gosh. When I heard the storyline, I was just so moved because, as I said to you in a text, my husband's, two uncles have died of Alzheimer's and dementia-related illnesses. I've had a friend whose mother died recently. And it just seems like this particular disease is running rampant. I mean, you got, of course, cancer, and now you got Alzheimer's and dementia, which is running, you know, neck and neck with the top disease here. And we want to know exactly what was the inspiration for, I see you did not write the movie, but maybe you could tell us if you were an inspiration in getting someone to write it, and how did the movie come to be?
Well, basically, by the way, thank you, Priscilla. It's very nice to be here, first of all. Basically, the movie was already written, and it's loosely based on a true story. We sort of incorporated the music into that about this character. My character, he's in a rock band, and my actual band that I'm in called Maleki Theory is also in the band. They all have, in the movie, excuse me, they all have small parts, but the band is called Maleki Theory, as I said, and the band is as itself, but we do all the original music in the movie, and everything is done by this band. Yes. I wrote all the lyrics to the music, the movie. Correct. Yes.
Okay. So I briefly explain what the film was about. I guess the inspiration, so it's a true story. So was the inspiration from the person who wrote it, was that the story about a member of their family that got Alzheimer's? I mean, a writer usually writes about something that is personal to them or that they felt strongly about. So tell us who the writer is and what was the, if you know, what was the inspiration for writing the film?
Well, I can't remember the writer's name at this point off the top of my head, but I will say that this was based on somebody in his family, yes, that contracted the disease, and everything sort of came to play in that. And the irony in this is that, you know, as you said earlier, you know, this is a disease that's rampant and everybody seems to be all over the place right now. It's the sort of new cancer, as they'd say. But the reality with cancer and this disease, which I saw my father go through, which I know we're going to get into eventually, there's no light at the end of the tunnel with this disease, which is why we need to do the best we can to get a cure for this, because there is no light at the end of the tunnel. And I've seen firsthand what it can do to us, to somebody. And it was my father that caught this disease, unfortunately. And I was there for the whole thing with him, unfortunately, to see him go through this. It was terrible. And that's why this movie, when we started this film, he was not sick, of course, which is why I took some time off once he got this disease. And it's just ironic that he happened to, I was portraying this character, and then sure enough, my father guessed his disease after we'd done shooting the film. He was diagnosed. So yes, it's solely loosely based, as I said. The reality was, after the fact, he became sick with this disease.
Yeah. You had, ironically, your father, you had said that your father died from Alzheimer's on August 17th, 2017, last year, which...
Yeah. August 7th, actually. Yeah,
oh,
August
okay.
7th of last year.
Okay, that,
yeah,
that
so just a year.
Correct. Make sure you correct
it. It's all good.
So that just recently passed. So again, I am very, very sorry that you just recently
Thank
went
you.
Through that. I mean, it's a very, very sore spot for us to talk about. I hope it's okay. If it's not, we'll just move on.
No.
But what was ironic
Good
you
therapy.
Said about it was that the date on the film when the story takes place was that the same. There was something ironic about it. The day your father died on the date of the film when the story takes place. Was that what you said?
Well, we implemented that into the film just to sort of make it more, not necessarily current, but after all this had happened, the realization of it all, and I wanted to implement that in the film to make it more current and to more or less, as homage to my father, which is the end of the film. It obviously is dedicated to him, but the August 7th thing we post in the beginning of it is where the story starts, because he goes back and forth with his memories and his, which he does a lot of, his memories come forth backwards and thinking about what he's lost, which what this film is about, loss and about regret, and basically trying to focus in on what you have. And I say this to all our listeners out there, to say, although this sounds kind of cliche, is to embrace every moment with our loved ones. And this is true for anything, not just because of a disease. Anything can happen, as we all know, because we're all in this together. We're all the human race, and tomorrow is guaranteed to no one. So if nothing else, you'll walk away with this from this film with that kind of a thing, to say, you know what, I want to go out and give a hug to my mom, my dad, whoever you care about, your dog, anybody, doesn't matter. If we lose sight, we get caught up in our everyday grind, especially me in this entertainment business, as most of your listeners know, it's a tough racket. And you have to find yourself become a little bit sort of, not selfish, but you have to sacrifice. And anything in life you want, in order to get what you want in life, you have to sacrifice. And that's a loaded statement, but you can take it any way you want, but you really do. I don't care if you're a bookkeeper or you're an actor or you're a director or you're racing horses, you have to focus and keep your eye on the prize and go after that. So a lot of times you get tunnel vision and you lose the life that's going on either side of you. So happiness is not a guaranteed thing, and you have to create it. You have to create your own existence in life, but you got to try and take advantage of it and don't waste time, because tomorrow is promised to no one.
Absolutely, Christopher. Now, you are a producer on this film, and I just wanted to get that information to the listeners of who the writer was on this wonderful film. It was written by John Hollis either a movie or a television show. It's referenced as Relentless. That sounds to me like it was a film that I've seen. And it was directed by Jennifer Tadlock from Streets of Hope and Victory by Submission. And the film was produced by Alan Hagen from America 101. Mm-hmm. And Jennifer Tadlock and you are producers also. I know Jennifer directs it. I think they said you were a producer, and it's executive produced by Mercedes Arhablu.
Mercedes Arhablu. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. There you go with another last name. Okay. So those are the people that are associated with the film and have done a wonderful job with the film. I saw the trailer, the teaser trailer, which, by the way, everyone can see if you go to YouTube and type in Last Curtain Call, and then make sure you do subscribe or give it a little thumb up. Everywhere you go, you got to just keep your thumb up. Just keep it up and get ready to give everybody else a little thumb. That used to be a bad thing. Now it's a good thing. Give a person a thumb. Now let's go back a little bit, Christopher, a little bit here. Let's go back to the beginning. Now, you're a native of Glendale, California, right here, a California boy. Growing up, Christopher, in the entertainment capital of the world, from your perspective, not from anybody else's perspective, but from yours, how has the entertainment industry changed? And what I mean by that, it could be the audition process, the casting opportunities, just overall, because you have seen a lot since your 12-year-old eyes. So tell us something. People who don't live in California, aren't in the entertainment industry, or they live in small towns and they want to come here, or they've heard all these stories. Give us something, Christopher.
Well, I don't want to be, I started professionally in the union in 1977. I know I'm dating myself, but that's okay. I was 12 years old. That's correct. And the way I've seen the, you know, when I was starting out in this business, it came to me very easily. You know, I was a cute kid, and I think you go through those changes. I remember being in school, and they'd come to get me out of school because I had an audition. I was very rarely in school, actually, and you had to maintain a certain average GPA, I should say, to stay in to get your union card. So at the beginning, it was it just came so easily, which I think I wasn't hungry. And, you know, because you're going through those changes as a young man, and then you start, that cute thing's kind of wearing off, and you're sort of in this other category. It's a tough business, and I have a daughter and I have a son, and if somebody was to ask me if I want my child to get into this industry, and I hate to say this, I would say no. It's a tough, tough business, and the way I've seen it change is it's obviously there's a lot more mediums out there, a lot of different places, a lot more channels out than there was when I started out, of course. You would think that would make it easier. And doing all the shows I've done, the amount of work that I've done, of course, you just scratch the surface. And, of course, your listeners can go to IMDb and type in my name to see the amount of work that I've
done.
Oh, we're
going to hit that. Don't think that I'm done with that, because I'm about to do a little bullet-pointed list of all my favorite shows that you've been on. So don't worry about that. We're going to hit them, Cody.
Nice.
We're hitting them. But
nice,
I understand
nice.
That you started working in show business at 12, and you were working continuously on Teen Magazine. Now, was Teen Magazine sort of like Teen Beat from the 70s and 80s, or
all the above? Yes, all the above. You do those interviews for that, the shows, and I was rubbing elbows with all the guys back in the day, and I don't want to drop names right now, but you know, there was people you wanted to be,
give me one, like the
late Leif Garrett and Scott Baio and all the guys.
Oh my god, I was obsessed with Leif Garrett, and of course I met Scott Baio at the Brown Derby. He's very, very nice. And of course Donny Osmond was like gone from the 70s, but you know, he was still trying. You know, I love me some Donny Osmond. I was just like a little tiny girl, but I still remember. What did you do working on Teen Magazine, hanging out with Leif Garrett and the boys?
Well, it wasn't that necessarily hanging, I mean, through the magazine, but they would have their parties. Of course, you would go rub elbows with them. And I, at the time, I guess closer to the 80s, people used to think I was Leif Garrett because my hair was long. And, you know, we would do these events and people would have me sign autographs. If I was Leif Garrett, I thought you were Leif Garrett. Well, anyway, people at home won't know the difference back then. But he's got a year or two on me, you know.
They were all drugged out. They thought you were Leif. You look like close enough. They were dropping the Quaaludes.
Well,
they're like, there's Leif. Yeah, and it's Christopher.
Yeah. I'm taking the fifth on the Quaalude thing, though. I'm taking the fifth on that one. But besides that,
that
was the era,
yeah. Yeah.
But it was a good time, as I mentioned, and everything came easy to me, and it made me very competitive, as I still am to this day. But I don't, at this point in my life, there are other things that are more important to me, so I don't take it as serious, you know, when the work comes in or the auditions or what have you. But you expect after the amount of work that you've done in soaps and TV shows and series I've been on when I was younger, that you expect the sort of the gates to open up to you once you're available to work again. And it doesn't always happen that way because there's always someone. And when you become to another level, you're going to get names that are bigger than you. So when you go into that room, they already have a backup offer for such and such. And they usually do that to more or less pin you against the person who is either playing hardball. And they say, well, we're seeing this guy, so make sure you agree to this price because we're seeing this guy, Christopher Malachy, or this person over here. So please make sure your client wants to do this role, we're looking at other actors. So it would put me sort of a different category, which is a good thing, but I was going against bigger names, which, tended to be a problem because it's about marketing and people sell the film overseas, depending on what the name is. But even back then, in the beginning, it would come so easy to me. It was just flowing. There was work coming. I almost didn't want to do the work because I wanted to play with my friends after school. But I realized, that it's a business. And that's why to this day, I'm a much more, I have very, very thick skin. And when it comes down to it, you always think it's a better guy that's going to get the job. And that's not always the case. There's a lot of politics involved. I mean, you might walk into a room, that producer, that caster, you might remind him of a guy that took his girlfriend in high school. Who knows? It's a human thing, right? You walk in. So you just don't know. And in this particular film, I was involved in the casting process. And because I'm an actor primarily, I'm the best guy to audition for an actor because I'm a guy that's what I do. And I'm more of a giving person. But a lot of times you walk into a room and it kind of sucks because they'll look at you and you can tell they're not interested 5 minutes into it. And they're kind of going through the motions of going through the dialogue with you, even though the project might already be cast, and they just put the breakdown out, which is a breakdown that's just to the agents to let them know what they're casting for. And the roles already cast, they do that just to get sort of a buzz about the project. So you spin your wheels a lot, and you don't know that going in, but you go in and you do your best, you take your time, you leave your work or you leave your school, whatever it is. And you show up, you do your work, and you show it and give the best darn thing you can do. And it doesn't matter a lot of times because, the decision's already been made, unfortunately.
I know. And the sad part is that actors have to work so hard just to get a buck to even participate in the field. Everything is so expensive. Headshots, acting classes, website memberships. Real quick tip. How would you prioritize as a beginning actor when they're on a budget? Because I'm telling you, there are so many scam artists out there.
Sure. Yep. And I can't stand that. For a short time before I got into doing soaps, when I was on Passions, actually, before that I was a photographer and I would give very good prices, but it was because I hate people that exploit actors because they come here and they offer, there's so many ridiculous things out there that offer, you shoot with me and then you go to this class and we'll try to get you an agent. That's all. Majority of the time is BS. What I would say to your listeners out there, anybody wants to get in the business, I would say this: get headshots, right? And then inundate, go online or buy a book for agents and inundate those agents with headshots, or go online, IMDb Pro, for example, and try to get their emails and just send. And also create a reel for yourself because a lot of beginner actors don't have a reel because obviously they haven't done any work yet. What you need to do is you need to create a reel, shoot your own stuff, something that hones into who you are, and shoot a scene and have it edited properly so it looks like it could be something theatrical, because there's so many independent films coming up every single day. Nobody can keep tabs on it, unless it's some big $100 million blockbuster. Then people know those films, but reality is they don't know all of them. So it's about smoke and mirrors. You got to learn to be a good BSer in this business too. It's not about where you've been, it's about where you're at that moment, because it doesn't really matter. You're only as good as your last gig. And going into this, you need to remember that, and you can't break up or break down if it doesn't follow through for you. Because, like, for example, you look at these American Idol, for example, and the guy gets cut and he breaks down, and that's fine, that's natural. But that's going to come 1,000 times in this industry. It's just going to come. Key is to know who you are, and that may sound kind of generic and sort of cliche, but it's a big deal. It took me years to figure that out. Say, this is who I am. You need to embrace your strengths. For example, I played a lot of bad guys my whole life and my whole career. And so I understand that. Now that I'm a bad guy, I play a killer on TV. It doesn't mean I'm actually a killer in real life, obviously. But you need to hone in on what your strengths are and bring you to each character you read. And also, when you read your material, You need to retype it yourself, take out all the punctuations, because the punctuations were put in there by the writer, but you need to make it your own. For example, there's a parenthesis there or a comma. It doesn't mean you're going to stop speaking there. Make it your own, because nobody speaks like you do. Nobody looks like you do. You're an individual, and that's what casting wants to see. They don't want to see you bring in a caricature of somebody. You need to bring you to the table, because there's nobody, no one like you in the world, on the planet. You're an original. You need to bring that to the table.
Oh, my God. That's such fantastic news. I have never heard that tip to type it and take out all the punctuation. That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
That is a really great tip. If you had to give three characteristic traits that it takes to make it as a successful actor, what would you say? Like persistence, you know, not cliche ones. Everybody does that one.
Well,
you know,
But that speaks volumes what you said. Persistence, thick skin, and focus. You need to stay focused. There's three words I used to live by, and it was sacrifice, believe, and faith. You have to sacrifice what you want. You have to believe in what you want, and you have to have faith in who you are and what you want. Those three things are tied together. And I would have tattooed that on my body a long time ago, but my dad wouldn't have had it, so I didn't do it. But those are three words I stand by. Those are three words. And it goes a long way. And it's really... I think the problem is, so that a lot of people overthink things like we do in life, okay? You can't overthink anything when it comes to this business, when it comes to your material. You have to know, you have to have a direction, you have to have a reason. And when you're speaking about something in a scene, you have to have an ending. You have to have an idea of what you want from that person you're talking to. I don't care if it's a small role and you're telling the guy, I have a cup of coffee, please, with 2 cubes of sugar. This is kind of a weird example, but you have to believe I want this reason why I want a cup of coffee. And I like two things of sugar because too much sugar gets me this or gets me that. You have to really go through it. And you have to have layers to your character, layers. That's what makes it interesting. Anyone can read material. Anybody can. You have to take chances, but you can't be married to that choice, because in the room, that director or that cast director will say, no, I don't like it. Go this direction. If you're too locked up on those words, it's going to be a doomsday for you. And I'll tell you something else. You have to know the material. Always hold your material in your hand. And that's the only time you won't be able to do that is if you're testing for a soap. They do not. If you're testing, that means the material's got to go away, and they're going to put you in a room. They're going to actually get you on the set, and you're going to actually do the exact thing you'd be doing if you're on this soap. But in film, you're testing the same thing. But normally speaking, an audition, even though you know those words, which you should know them, before you can throw those words away and make it your own, you have to know them. You have to know them. And then hold the material in your hand at all times. Because what that tells the people that you're reading for is that you're not married to the words, and it's still a work in progress. I wish somebody told me this stuff years ago, by the way.
I know! That's what I was going to... You're like, you're psychic here, because I was going to ask you, what are, again, three things, because I don't want to be too much, but you pretty much have said it, because one of my questions was, what are three things that if you could go back and tell yourself before you got started as an actor, what tips or advice would you give your little 12-year-old self? So you kind of covered them all.
Yeah, I kind of covered them, but again, it's really about my 12-year-old self would be to say, to really know who you are. And that's a hard thing to tell a 12-year-old, because the 12-year-old wants to go out and play with his friends, and he gets kind of bummed out when the phone rings. Of course, you kill for that now when you're older, because when your phone rings, your mom's looking, you got it, or hey, we got to go, we got this audition. No after-school sports for you, son. You got to do this. And anytime somebody would walk into to my class with a note, I knew it was for me. I start packing my bags. I know I'm leaving for an audition. That was it.
I love it.
It made me very popular.
With the girls,
exactly.
I would imagine. Christopher, I get a lot of questions from aspiring actors who are very, very either very, very nervous to do this or don't want to do this at all. It is this. What advice? How do you successfully network and market yourself at these little, you know how you have to go to little networkers and the fundraisers and the little parties and your target as an actor, there's different steps. Like, for example, people, this is to my audience, if you're an actor, your target people to network with are going to be casting directors, directors, producers. If you're a director, it's mostly producers, but you still want to do the actors. If it's a producer, it's an executive producer in a studio. So you have your like little circles that you want to focus on. But of course, everybody should be treated equally and inclusive. Now, not everyone is a natural networker and marketer of themselves and their work. Because as an actor, you are a business. You are an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. So you have to be the sales department, the marketing department, the accounting department, the administrator. You got to be everything. But a lot of actors say that they are extremely intimidated being around casting directors and directors because, you know, these people can smell desperation. And then I have been personally a witness to actors overselling themselves or not selling themselves or reeking of desperation or not acting like they're interested. What is the perfect combination for a person who's not a natural networker?
Well, I'll say this. Obviously, it's about who you know in this industry, okay? But desperation, you hit on the head, is a very unattractive trait. I don't care if you're at the nightclub and it's 1:30 at night, you want to meet a girl. Yeah, the girl knows what you want. It's 1:30 at night, and you waited too long. And I hate to use that as an analogy, but the idea is it's a very unattractive trait. People have to understand the nerves, you have to use those nerves. You have to use it. And I know that's a tough thing to try to explain, but everybody gets nervous. You watch any of these documentaries or any of these shows about these musicians or actors, they still get nervous because that's what keeps you going. That feeling you get when you're on stage, be it doing theater, which I recommend to people also, but to do any kind of thing, that feeling that you get when you disappear in that character is something you cannot explain. And that's what everybody is trying to recapture. Again, people have to understand, when you go in that room, that casting director, he wants you to do well. He's not your enemy. He's not your foe. He wants you to do well. And he brought you in, he or she brought you in for a reason, because A, they know your worth. B, you have the look they're looking for. You wouldn't be there for any other reason. And of course, there are other factors involved, as I mentioned earlier on in this conversation, that still things could be cast. But the majority of the time, you're there because they want you to do well. So you cannot think about that. That guy sitting across from you, or that girl sitting across from you, she bleeds just like you do. So you cut them, they're going to bleed. So they're on the same page as you. And the reality is, although they have the ability to bring you in, once the producer sees you, they're going to talk to each other, of course, after the fact. But that person going in is your friend. You can't think about them and be going in and feel intimidated by them, or they're better than you or bigger than you. They're no better or bigger. And a lot of times, and I'll tell you something, I found this out, a lot of those casting directors, especially early on in my career, were like frustrated actors who now want to be in the position to have a little bit of a power thing. And I've met a lot of really rude people in this industry who have been on the other side of the table, who had that control, and they exploit it, unfortunately. And that's why it's a very, very tough business for anyone involved. You hear a lot of bad stories out there where kids get exploited and people get exploited, especially for women too, of course. And that's a big thing. And I feel bad about that. And a lot of these people get these pictures, for example, that look like they're shot 20 years ago. And I know a lot of women have dealt with that. And they touched up pictures. And a lot right now, it's not even hard copy anymore. It's all about stuff on the internet. So really, you usually don't ever bring a hard copy into the room anymore because they don't want them. It's really non-existent. You take your pictures, and you shouldn't spend a lot of money on pictures, by the way, either. You only need 2 or 3 shots. And that's all you need. It's going to go online. So a lot of times, about 90% of casting, they don't want a hard copy anymore. They don't want it. You're going to go in the room, and they already have your stuff. They're going to put you on tape. And you have to keep in mind, bring in a couple of choices when you go into the room with your reading, by the way.
Absolutely.
So I would say that definitely there's a lot of sharks out there, a lot of snakes out there, and it's hard to trust anybody in this business. If it sounds too good to be true, it's because it is. Mm-hmm. It means it's true. It's too good to be true, and it's not real. I'm sorry, but it's a harsh reality.
I wanted to get your opinion real quick, and then we're going to move on to your projects. A a lot of people ask me, because you, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but you heard how they have actually been arresting casting directors and people who hold these acting workshops. And they've made all, now I have been to these things. I actually feel like I've gone to legitimate ones. I don't think I have ever been to one where there was a casting director that was doing something illegitimate, because, you know, I've been in the business for a very long time and I can spot a scam artist like right away. It's like ding, 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 ding. But, and I've never been, but I have heard horror stories. What is your advice to new actors who, because they're still, they're rounding them up. Basically, for those people who are not familiar with this, if you come to California or pretty much anywhere now, there are people who have what they call, and I'm going to put air quotes on these, casting director workshops. So what they do is they hire these, again, air quotes, casting directors who come, and they have actors, they charge you a price, then you come in and you read for them, and they may or may not give you a note, and then they say thank you. So you're going to pay anywhere from $40 to $80. You go in, it's a whole bunch of people. You read a side. You get in front of a casting director who has these, you know, credits, and then they do what's called a disclaimer at the beginning of the class and say, this is not for employment. This is just for education. Well, ha, ha, ha on that. And but good things and bad things can come from these classes. One, you know, you have casting directors who are there to legitimately look and find, honestly, they're not supposed to, but come on, we're humans, as Christopher said. So they are there and they are seeking talent for projects they're casting, but they are also there to give tips and, again, advice. And a lot of times what they do is you go up there, you read your sign, they go, okay, great, thanks. And then the next person comes up. So what has happened is these actors are like, what the hell is going on? I paid $40 to $80. I don't want to hear great thanks next. I want some advice. I want some tips. I want you to tell me, you know, what am I doing wrong? And that wasn't happening. So what happened was there was a crackdown. A lot of casting directors were arrested, and there we are. And now casting workshops have gotten a bad rap, but they are not all bad. How can you distinguish, what is your perspective on that? Because you might, you know, think differently.
Well, I have not done, I've not done many of those, but they're absolutely, I'm not going to condemn those, because they're actually very good ones out there. If you're starting out in the business, you have nothing to lose other than a few dollars.
That's what
you need to do when you get the name of that person, hey, they want to make money too. And they don't, probably don't make as much as they should be, I guess, some of these cast members. But there's a lot of reputable people that do those things, and there's also agents that do those things. So I would recommend doing those, but to do the background on those people. That IMDb Pro, I say Pro because IMDb Pro, you have to pay for that. It's like $100 a year. But I definitely, and I don't have stock in it, I'm saying that's a good one to do because it gives you a lot more information on whoever it is you're looking in to see.
Right.
But I definitely would recommend doing those, because I know people have gotten work from those. And the agents that come, you just look them up. And a majority of them, a lot of them, not majority, a lot of them are reputable. And they will probably throw you a bone maybe and give you that, that small role on that project. And it can't hurt. Because, look, you're going to spend money in this industry. You're going to – it's called sacrifice, like I told you about at the beginning of this interview. You can definitely seek it out and just look those people up. And this is a business of smoke and mirrors, and that's fine. You give them what you're getting. You give them smoke and mirrors back when it comes to your acting, what you've done. That's fine. Create some things, alias things, put them out there. But the point is you – I would recommend going to some of those workshops. There's some reputable ones. No names I can drop right now for you. I'm not going to, because I don't know off the top of my head.
Well, they should be able to do that themselves, because the bottom line, Christopher, is you cannot rely on word of mouth anymore, because a lot of times there's what's called payola. They get kickbacks. But the bottom line with anything, even if it's not the entertainment industry, for your own personal safety, you have to do fact checking. You have to do due diligence. You've got to look it up. Google is your best friend. And in the entertainment industry, Google plus IMDb. It is IMDb.com. It stands for International Movie Database. And you want to get pro. Just the regular one is just to look up, you know, actors and credits and stuff. But the pro is is really great because it gives the name. Say, for example, you wanted to look up Demi Moore. You look up Demi Moore on the right-hand side, you're going to see who her agent is, her production company, her talent manager, how to get her PR people, how to get in touch with her. And that's very important. And usually legitimate people will have their credits listed there and they will have their representative. So definitely IMDb Pro. Now let's get to the fun part. You, Christopher, you have so many films and episodic TV shows on your little belt notches, and it would take an enormous amount of time to list all of them. But I wanted to mention some of my absolute favorites that you were on. A lot of people may not know this, but you were David Provost on The Sopranos, Billy Worth on The Lost Boys. Albert is obsessed with Kiefer Sutherland in 24, by the way, and he's watched The Lost Boys forever. The lovable, of course, who everybody knows you and remembers you, the lovable bad boy Spike. Spike Lester on Passions. You were on one of my favorite shows, Beverly Hills 90210, Party of Five, which I loved. You had recurring roles on Santa Barbara, The Bold and Beautiful, Pacific Blue, Days of Our Lives. But I had to bring out one of my absolute favorites, CSI New York. Oh my God, I love that show. I love Gary Sinise. And of course, you've done so many characters in film and television that really have you've really rocked the roles. And, that kind of rhymes, you rock the roles. You rock the roles, and you have just done so many. So let me ask you, from your perspective, your opinion, what was your absolute favorite role to do and why?
All right. Well, you just said I liked the character I played on Passions because it was the longest character. I did over 300 episodes, and that character I enjoyed immensely because I not only learned a lot working on that show, because first of all, a lot of soap operas get a bad rap, and I know there's a lot of bad work out there for anybody for any kind of TV show, but you know, on soaps, I mean, you can do up to 45 pages a day. And you have to be off book, and you can do three shows in one day, or you lose your job. But that character, I started with three episodes, and I had no name. I was a club owner. That's what they called my character, and they said it would determine on how well the character did decide whether or not it would go further. And so obviously it did, and then I got this name Spike, and then of course the first couple of episodes, I think I wore my own clothes actually. They added to it, but it was primarily the same. So, again, it was club owner. But I liked that character a lot because I learned a lot, particularly working on another soap before that, which was called Port Charles. I didn't make the character interesting. And this is what I tell you about making choices for actors, because I just made him. He was just an a-hole, basically. He wasn't a nice guy. And I knew on Port Charles, they would see this character come and they go, oh, there's this jerk again. And I didn't make him interesting. There was no layers to him. So if you've seen Spike, my character Spike on Passion, you know he did the most horrendous things, from murdering people, to selling his wife for prostitution, to selling his baby, so many things. And I thought to myself, how am I going to make this guy likable? I mean, I tell you what, and they told me initially in the beginning, don't go to the chat rooms because you're gonna, you know, it might hurt your feelings, all the stuff you read. Well, of course, first thing I did was go to the chat rooms. In the beginning, people were like, oh, this guy's a jerk. But after a while, they felt sympathetic toward me, which is exactly what I was trying to do. Because they thought, there's got to be a reason. This is your job as an actor. This is your work to put in. You have to make him, you have to put a question mark to why is he doing these things? There's got to be a reason. You have to make him likable. Likable is the key word here, likable. Because anybody can be a bad guy. Anybody can be a jerk. And back to Port Charles. I'll never forget that. They killed me off on my birthday. I'll never forget it. Because the guy was just not a likable guy. He just, the jerk came in, but I learned from it. I also learned to make it your own, as I told you several times already in this dialogue we're having, that you have to make it your own. You have to make him likable. Everybody, no matter who it is, has got to be likable. There's got to be some redeeming quality in that character or the audience will lose interest. You're just a jerk. Here he comes. I hope he dies. Nobody cares. Of course, I heard that too, but majority of the time, it was all positive. Like, oh, God, Spike is this, he's that. You know what? I like him so much. He's funny. He's this. I played the opposite, which is another thing I want to mention. It's good to play the opposites. You know, instead of telling somebody, the line is, I'm going to kill you. And the guy says, I'm going to kill you. And he's all excited about it. And he's telling the guy to kill. Anybody can scream, I'm going to kill you. But you got to make it interesting. You have to say under your breath, however it's going to be. You know, you got to make it interesting. Why you tell us who's going to kill them? Yeah, it's on the delivery. But you can't just go generic.
Now, that is excellent advice for the actor. But did you ever get pushback from the director who may not see the character the way you did?
Nope.
And if so, how do you? Okay. So they liked everything you did. But that does happen.
Yeah.
Like actors will say, okay, well, I see the character this way. And then the director is like, nope, I see the character this way. Yeah. And you've seen that happen because you've worked on like thousands of shows. What is the best way to handle it for the actor?
Well, if we're talking about daytime, they're doing so much work every single day. The producers in the booth, it's a small area. They just want to get through the pages. And for example, I worked with certain actors, names I won't mention. And they're like, Chris, look, I'm just going to look at, like, I'm looking at your forehead. I just got to get through this dialogue. Well, to me, I'm like, I want to be triggered to say my next line. And I've studied, hopefully get this later, what place I've studied the method, which I've studied, which I highly recommend. We'll get that later if you'd like. But I would say to myself, this is my ride. That's fine. But I'm going to experience this and enjoy this journey that I'm on right now. And if this actor who I'm in the scene with wants to just run their lines, that's their problem. You know, that's their thing. This is my journey, though. And it's not about being selfish. It's about the acting. The key is listening. You need to listen. That's acting 101. You need to listen. And a lot of actors, you know, they're so ingrained. Those words are so ingrained in their brain that they're not listening to what the guy says. The guy may say, change the line. Instead of saying, what time is it? He may say, hey, you want a glass of water. And you're like, yeah, 6 o'clock. But that wasn't the question because you're not listening.
Yep.
Because he's thinking about what's going to come next. He's not in the moment.
He's waiting for his line. He's waiting for his line. He's like, yep.
Yep. Acting truthfully under imaginary circumstances. That's the phrase. Acting truthfully under imaginary circumstances.
Yeah.
That's acting 101. Yeah.
Yeah. And that is, and you can always see it right in their eyes. So anyway, we've got a couple minutes and I want to get back to our wonderful, you have given incredible tips and advice. Gosh, I would love to have you back if you ever have time in the future to just talk about soap opera, because I cannot tell you how many people want to know about the world of soap operas, and not many people have worked on soap opera. So you're one of the few people that I have in my collection now. I'm going to say my collection, my question reality collection of superstars, super soap opera stars. Mm-hmm. So we'd love to have you back whenever you're available. But
sure.
I want to bring back the film. Let's focus on that. It is going to be, I am coming to the premiere on the 23rd. It's going to be playing at the Arena Cine Lounge, 6464 Sunset Boulevard. This film, highly recommend it for anyone. I cannot imagine there's not a person that you have known in your life that hasn't either had a family member or a friend who's had Alzheimer's or dementia or has died from this disease as a result. There are over 232 different diseases that are under the umbrella of Alzheimer's and dementia, just like being a psychotic. It's kind of the same thing. So if you have not experienced it, people, yet, there is a possibility that you will. So I would imagine there's lots of stuff in this movie that you are going to want to know and just to go through the experience. Real quick, why should people come to the film who have not had and have not been touched by Alzheimer's and dementia? Why should they come? It's like, why should I come? I'm not interested in that subject. Why should they?
Right. Well, there's a lot of music in this movie also, but I think it's not about really dementia. The idea, it's about people trying to respect what they have in life at their disposal, their family, that a lot of times we take for granted. You think you're going to go to for a cup of coffee or a glass of milk, come back. Anything can happen on the highway. This film is about helping you to appreciate what you have. And it's about loss and it's about regret. A lot of us have that. And regret, to me, as they say, is like a bag of rocks we carry around with us, which is not a healthy thing. But this film will give you an idea of what it's like to remind you of what you have. And it might be too late. So you need to act on it now. And you need to really, really focus on people in your life that you love, and to remember that tomorrow is not promised to anyone. Unfortunately for this character, you know, once he finds this out, it's too late for him. And then things start happening. I would say I would compare the film.
And I'm not,
I would compare it a little bit to the movie Sixth Sense, is all I'm going to say.
But
the reality is that what you think is reality is not reality. And it might be something else you're looking at. It might be your imagination. It might be your past. It might be really what's going on in front of you. But this film will help you. I would hope this is about this movie will pull at your heartstrings. It's an uplifting movie to an extent. But then again, it's real. And it's about current things that are going on in the world today. So I think it's imperative for everyone to go see it.
Yes. Everybody wants
also
to
want to mention
it. Yeah, go ahead.
I also might mention the day that it starts in the theater. It'll also be up on Primetime also, I believe. Amazon Primetime, I believe.
Amazon Prime.
But yeah, I don't know everything. But it will be in the theater. Hopefully we'll get a longer run out of this. Because the reason why it's taken long to get this film out was because I was dealing with my father. So it kind of held things up on post-production. And my hands were full. And back to what we were talking about, it made me realize that the most important things, I sacrificed a lot for this business. And I lost a lot because of it. It made me a stronger person, a better person than I am today as a grown man, of course. But I've also made me realize really what's important. And the industry or whatever it is you're doing in your life is not the most important thing.
Absolutely.
People around you, your support group, that's the most important thing. And I hate to sound cliche or corny, but that's true.
It's so real. And so we got to end now. And I want to thank Mr. Christopher Malecki for coming on. You want to go see the movie August 24th through the 30th. It's called Last Curtain Call. It has legendary rock band guy Gilby Clark from Guns N' Roses. So if anything, you want to see him, Christopher's going to be playing some music. I imagine Gilby Clark's going to be playing some music. So you don't even want to miss that. So Meet me there. I'll be there Thursday. I will be there if you want to meet me. August 23rd, Arena Cinema Lounge.
The premiere.
The premiere is August 24th.
The premiere is the 23rd.
23rd. Okay.
23rd.
This information that I've gotten. So it opens. So I'm thanking gosh now because I'm like, why am I going on the 23rd when the 24th it opens? Okay. I'll be there the 23rd. It's the premiere. Okay.
If you're going to the premiere, you're a big shot. That's what.
I'm going to the premiere. Okay. So everybody else, sorry. August 24th through the 30th, go to the website arenascreen.com and get your tickets and check it out on Facebook, Last Curtain Call. Thank you, Christopher, for coming on. Get in contact with me so you can come on next year, okay?
For sure, hon. Thank you so much. Love you. Love to see you soon. And everybody out there, go after your dreams. Don't let anyone get in front of you. Do what you want to do in life, but just live in the moment. Embrace it.
Absolutely. So this is our Last Curtain Call. We'll see you next week on Question Reality. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.